transcribed.
Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents a story out of that great composite of visions, struggles, and victories of the American past, our inheritance. Yes, we Americans are heirs to a vast fortune. A fortune compounded of many things. Of Franklin's experiment with a kite and a key. The writing of a great document called the Declaration of Independence. And the voice of a great bell proclaiming liberty. It is the Virginia militia of young Colonel Washington. And Ethan Allen's Green Mountain Boys. Let us now go back to a significant chapter in America's history, one which we all share in our inheritance.
The delegates of the United Colonies, to all under whom these presents shall come, send greetings. Know ye that we, by these presents, do grant license and authority to Abraham Whipple, mariner, commander of the sloop Providence, to fit out and set forth in a warlike manner and by force of arms to attack, seize, and take the ships belonging to the inhabitants of Great Britain on the high seas. By order of the Congress, John Hancock, President.
They say he was a sailor, was old Abe Whipple, a Yankee captain from Rhode Island. And few there were on the Atlantic or any other ocean who could stride a deck with the cock-of-the-walk authority he commanded. He was a driver, they say, tough as barnacles and built close to the deck, with sharp gray eyes and fists like marlin spikes. And he drove a ship till her timbers groaned, and when he called to quarters, it was like the roar of a wounded lion. But Abraham Whipple was also a man who dreamed of a free America, who had long resolved to sail under no flag but that of his own choosing.
I've been to sea since I was a lad. Not fancy school, but I know the stars, the sea, the sextant, and the guns. The 23 French captains whose ships I took during the French Indian Wars can tell you that. And I know right from wrong. No king is going to tell me where my ship can or can't go in American waters.
This was 1772, not a time when ordinary men spoke out that way. By provisions of the new Stamp Act, vessels could not sail without the required stamps. England, which had maintained only a few frontier outposts, was now sending regiments to enforce the act. Then, as if things weren't already bad enough, along came the sloop Gaspé. She appeared off the coast of New England one day, a sloop of war, 27 men and 6 cannon under Lieutenant William Duddington.
Stand by for boarding!
Somehow, neither his attitude nor his sentiments settled too well with the people.
I would be delighted to see Newport burn and not lift a finger to put out the fire. What's more, I'll stamp out this smuggling if I have to blow every American ship out of the water. I'll show them the proper respect.
And they called him a pirate, too, for Lieutenant William Duddington was not above helping himself to a bit of the cargo now and then. And to show his contempt, he cut their fruit trees for firewood, all of which resulted in the colonial governor's writing a protest to Admiral John Montague at Boston. And the admiral's reply?
I am informed that the people of Rhode Island talk of fitting out an armed vessel to rescue those the king's sloop may take. Let them be cautious what they do, for as sure as they attempt it, I shall hang them as pirates.
That's how it stood in June 17, 1772, when the ship Hannah, under Captain Benjamin Lindsay, rounded Nanquit Point, the sloop Gaspé in hot pursuit. Captain Lindsay veered suddenly and... The Gaspé found herself high, dry, and aground. In Providence, feelings ran hot at the news and...
Gaspé is aground off Nanquit Point. All interested meet at John Brown's home immediately. Hoyes! Hoyes! The Gaspé is aground.
Then it's agreed. We meet at Winner's Park at 9. Bring your guns, swords, stones, anything you can get. Dunton can't float her off till after high tide at midnight. If all goes well, he'll never float her off. It's tonight or never.
Sixty-four volunteers in 8 longboats formed in a line abreast and made silently for the cutter outlined in the moonlight. They were approaching under the bow where Duddington could not bring his cannon to bear when...
Who goes there? Who are you men?
The sentry. Don't fire. Use your rocks if you have to.
Stand off or I'll fire. Stand off, I say.
Now!
What is this? What do you want with this ship?
I'll try to trick him.
I'm the sheriff of Kent County, and I have a warrant to apprehend you, dang blast you, so you better surrender.
I'll surrender to no one. Now pull away before I order my men to fire.
Eve, reach me a gun. I can get that fella.
I've come for you, blast your eyes, and I'm going to get you. All right, men, we're boarding that ship.
Fire!
That's your last order! I've killed him! I've killed the rascal.
And good riddance.
I'm wounded. Help me, someone. Help me, please. Help me, please.
You men, take that section. You men below, don't give them a chance to get any more men on deck.
Hopkins, step here.
Any names, you fool? No names at all. Tie those men up and disarm the others. Doctor, you take care of Dudden's wounds. Good thing you were along.
Treason. You will all hang for this when word reaches the Admiral.
Treason, eh? This ship is crowded with loot you've taken from honest people. Stand aside. I'll dispatch this piratical dog.
No, please, don't kill me.
I had no intention of doing so. Merely wanted to see how a man who bullies the weak would act without his authority. You didn't disappoint me. Put this man ashore and set a torch to the sloop.
Captain Whipple burned the Gaspé clear to the waterline. And there she flamed, a gigantic torch for all to see and remember. King George appointed a committee to investigate. £1,000 was offered for the leader, and £500 and a full pardon for any member who turned King's evidence. The gentlemen in England were pretty concerned.
American licentiousness has grown into treason. If we pass over this atrocious offense to British authority... There's no telling where it may lead. It's well known that the so-called Sons of Liberty regard His Majesty's sloop, the Gaspé, as a test case.
But the people of Rhode Island, meanwhile, had developed the worst case of memory lapses in history. In a year, the committee was unable to find anybody to hang, and the matter had to be dropped. By this time, some gentlemen in Boston had arranged a party of their own, a tea party. Then, in 1775, what was bound to happen did. In Boston, a group of patriots rushed the square.
Disperse! In the name of the king! I order you to disperse!
The British fired. Americans fell in a fusillade that touched off the powder keg of revolution. Abe Whipple lost no time. The day he was commissioned Commodore of the Rhode Island Fleet, he decided to get him a British ship. He was no idle boaster. That same day, he sailed out before a brisk wind, and when he spotted the sloop Rose and her tender...
Strike, you rascals, or I'll blast you out of the water!
Another broadside, mister, so they'll know I mean business.
Look, sir, the Rose is hightailing, leaving the tender to us.
She's ours, sir, we've won!
It was the first naval battle of the American Revolution, and the start of Whipple's war against the British. He had proven how Yankee sailormen could fight, and that stopping Whipple was like catching a tornado in a paper bag. By 1776, tough, determined, with an unbelievable list of victories behind him, he was created a captain of the Continental Navy to command the Providence, a frigate of 28 guns.
Gentlemen of the Congress, I regret to report that General Washington's army has suffered badly at Long Island and has been forced to retire. The war goes badly with us.
All attempts of Congress to establish a navy have virtually failed. Privateers are our only substantial hope of showing proper defiance, capturing desperately needed supplies, and helping our treasury to obtain arms and powder for General Washington's harassed troops.
Steadily, desperately, came the orders from Congress.
Urge haste in getting to sea and preying on British transport and commerce.
Four times, Commodore Whipple was taken prisoner during those grueling years, but always he returned to fight. And the sound of cannon, of dying men and burning ships became a terrible, never-ceasing part of his life. Then, in June 1778...
From Congress to the Commissioners, Naval Board, Boston, direct that the Providence be prepared for sea to carry important dispatches to France.
These dispatches were a proposed treaty with the government of France, one which would mean naval aid and recognition for the United Colonies. But just outside Narragansett Bay, the British blockaders waited.
Broad daylight. It seems every ship in the British Navy's out there.
Yeah. And does seem so, Mr. Springer. Steady, she goes, quartermaster.
Aye, aye, sir.
Nervous, Mr. Springer?
Yes, sir.
We'll make it, lad. We'll make it.
Stand by your port and starboard guns, and I'll strip the bacon off the first man who touches a match, or I give the order. Hard a starboard, quartermaster. Set a course twixt a brig and a tender. Easy now.
Sir, they're making signal to lay to.
We take our orders from the American Navy. We'll get to France if we have to swim. Alert your crew, mister. Double pay and rations for every man who scores a hit today.
You hear, lads? Stand by to fire. We're ready for him, sir.
This one's for me.
Just give the word, Captain. We'll put her deck wide open.
Sir, they divine our intent. That sloop is closing on us.
Then we'll pass over her.
Captain, we'll be in a pocket outgunned a dozen to one.
Bear between them. Longer lee quarter. Steady.
I command you to stand by. You can't escape.
They're on either side of us, sir.
Mr. Springer, just as there are two sides to every dispute, there are always two broadsides to every ship. It would be hardly fair to give only the lead guns a chance at double pay, now would it, eh? Lay low, men! We're almost abreast now.
Fire!
Now, lads, while they reload, let's show them how it's done. Ready? Fire away! Now, you riflemen aloft, don't let them reload. Keep up a constant fire. You gunners, we'll rake them again. Fire!
We got her. The others are giving way.
Of course we got her. Just because we're on a pleasure cruise, we shouldn't neglect our greetings to King George.
All win for France. Quartermaster.
And so, the treaty dispatches reached France, and on the way home, just to keep things lively, Captain Whipple picked up a few more ships. Says one source of Captain Whipple,
daring and strategy were the keystones of this patriot's career.
And another,
some of his achievements were so singular and extraordinary as to appear more like romance than reality.
None could have been more so than that which began one foggy June morning in 1779 off the coast of Newfoundland. The Commodore led his squadron, consisting of the frigates Providence, Ranger, and Queen of France.
Sir. Sir.
Huh?
You must come on deck immediately.
Well, what is it, Mr. Springer?
Sir, we're in the middle of a huge British convoy.
Blast me for a popinjay if you're not right. If it weren't for this fog, they would have seen us by now. Are the Ranger and Queen of France dropping back with us?
Aye, sir. We'll soon be completely out of sight.
But so will the enemy, Mr. Springer.
Sir? Good Lord. Look there, Captain.
Huh? What was it? What'd you see?
For a moment, the fog broke. A man of war, sir. And she mounted 70 guns and she mounted one.
Sir, did you see her?
We saw her, Bosun.
The men have counted three other men of war and a dozen merchantmen in the last hour.
Judging from those signal guns, they must extend for miles. Mr. Springer.
Aye, sir.
I'm becoming very curious about the situation. We have a Union Jack in the flag locker.
Aye, sir.
Good. Run it up and secure your gun ports, Bosun. We're going to have a close look at this business.
Captain Whipple had himself a close look, all right. About 11, the fog lifted, and he found himself in the midst of over 150 sail.
It's the entire Jamaica fleet.
And we with only three ships.
Look there! A three-decker, hardly able to waddle. She's that loaded down? Miles of British ships. A fortune in sugar, cotton, spices, foodstuffs, and guns and powder that could go to our own cause. Fetch me my chart, Mr. Springer.
Aye, sir.
Now look. Here we are, above the 40th parallel. We'll follow course due south to here.
Sir, surely you don't...
To join him, Mr. Springer. In the clear, we shall be simple merchantmen. At night and in the fog... Have you ever hunted ducks, Mr. Springer?
Sir?
The good hunter always picks off the last duck. The one nobody will miss.
That one duck over there carries as many guns as we do, sir. If the Commodore will forgive me, this is one case when discretion could be the better part of valor.
I don't know any fancy sayings, Lieutenant, but I do know a good prize when I see one. And I know also that General Washington's men need boots, guns, and powder if they're going to win the war. Have them shot and sail, mister. We'll communicate our plan to the Ranger and the Queen of France.
It became a matter of waiting for a fog or nightfall, putting a longboat aside a merchantman and boarding her.
Enough! I cry quarter!
But occasionally, some particularly stubborn captain had to be convinced by the sight of the American flag flying over a 14-gun broadside. It became a deadly, nerve-wrecking game, during which Captain Whipple and his men lived on the verge of being discovered and blown to pieces by the powerful British escort, sort of like a mouse taking cheese from between a cat's paws. And then one day...
We're discovered, sir. That ship's bearing down on
us. We've got the chance to fight.
We dare not...
We must! Gunner, stand by to fight your guns! You can't afford to miss! Fire!
She was the Holderness, three decks, 22 guns, and she, too, struck after a broadside or two. All told, Captain Whipple and his men played their dangerous game with 11 enemy ships, putting a prize crew on each and sending it back to Boston. 8 arrived, the others being retaken by British privateers. And when the unbelievable tally was reported in Philadelphia...
Why, gentlemen... It tallies to over $1 million.
This will stand as one of the richest prizes of the war.
Yes. Along about 1779, Captain Whipple was much the hero of the day, and the ship Providence, often on the records of the American Navy.
The Continental Congress congratulates Commodore Whipple on the success of his cruise off Newfoundland, urged speedy preparations of the Providence for another cruise.
In 1780, he was rewarded by being assigned commander of naval forces at Charleston, South Carolina. But of all the rewards accorded him, the best was his own picture of the puzzled British counting and recounting their ships in port.
How will they ever explain that one to George?
When at last Charleston fell to Sir Henry Clinton's and Admiral Arbuthnot's combined forces, Captain Whipple became a prisoner for the fifth time. But England had resolved not to exchange privateers. And so, for Abe Whipple, the fighting was over. Commodore Abraham Whipple, a true patriot, a man who had given so unselfishly of himself to the cause of freedom, with his courage had ignited a torch that would light the footsteps of a young country toward the American way of life. High, too, are the standards of courage and resourcefulness he had willed to the American Navy of today. In 1784, after 9 years of faithful, outstanding service, during which he had served without pay, often advancing large sums of his own money to Congress for supplies, Abraham Whipple retired a legend. But not before having the honor of another first. That year, he became the first Yankee skipper to unfurl the American flag on the River Thames. A free sailorman on a free ship. You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. We are privileged this evening to hear from the National Vice Commander of the American Legion, Department of New Hampshire, Mr. John J. High.
In June, students and teachers throughout the United States clean out their desks,
pack the books and chalk away in the closet, wash the blackboards, congratulate themselves on a job well done, then go on the picnic in observation of the last day of school. At this time of year, American Legion School Medal Awards are presented. Last year, 18,559 of these awards were made throughout the country. In operation since 1926, this awards program is designed to encourage the development of those character traits which make for good American citizenship. Far too often, an exaggerated importance is placed on scholarship. Good scholarship is most important. Good school grades demonstrate industry, perseverance, efficiency, and intelligence on the part of the boy or the girl who achieves them. The American Legion believes, however, that attention should be given to the development of the whole child. If the America of the future is to be a healthy, sound nation, today's children must also be encouraged in the development of such moral values as honor, courage, leadership, and service. If these traits are not developed in our youngsters, our country faces internal disintegration and decadence. It was for the fostering of these qualities that the American Legion system of school medal awards was designed. Thousands and deserving students have received them this month on the basis of student-teacher recommendation. It is our hope that through this type of educational stimulus, the wealth of our American heritage will be increased and that the future of our land will bring to harvest the precious seeds of freedom which are the basis of our inheritance.
Thank you, Mr. John J. High. Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of history to a time when Americans, dreaming of the future, forged that which we possess today. Today's story, Whipple's War, was written by William D. Lansford and featured William Woodson as Abraham Whipple. Included in the cast were Dawes Butler, Howard Culver, Tom Cound, Ben Wright, James McCallion, Robert Emlin, Jack Carroll, Byron Kane, Gil Harmon, and Parley Bear. The original music was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Inheritance is produced and directed for the National Broadcasting Company and the American Legion by Albert McCleary. This is John Lang speaking. The preceding program was transcribed earlier. Every day, Monday through Friday, you'll find enjoyable daytime radio entertainment on this NBC station. Whether it's comedy, drama, or quiz fun you're looking for, keep your dial set to NBC for the finest. Brighten your day the radio way with the interesting stories on Welcome Travelers from Chicago with your host, Tommy Bartlett. Laugh with NBC's Hope for the Housewife, Bob Hope, and his daily quarter hour of humor. And speed your way through straightening up the house, dusting, or vacuuming as you listen to such fun-filled shows as Strike It Rich and The Phrase That Pays. And remember, every day, Monday through Friday, NBC presents wonderful daytime drama on such programs as The Road of Life, Pepper Young's Family, The Right to Happiness, Backstage Wife, Stella Dallas, Young Widder Brown, and The Woman in My House, to name only a few. Why don't you make it a daily habit to chase your housework blues away by keeping your radio tuned to NBC? Yes, always tune where you hear the familiar three NBC chimes. They're your invitation to the finest radio entertainment. Subcommittee Counsel Ray Jenkins will meet the press tonight on the NBC Radio Network.